Greetings to my listeners all around the world. Welcome to Safe Dividend Investing's podcast number 119 on June 8th of 2023. My name is Ian Duncan MacDonald. In today's podcast, I'll be answering three interesting investment questions. But before I begin, I'd like to remind listeners that the purpose of my podcast and my books is to show those with patience and common sense that they are capable of successfully managing their own investment portfolios. They just need to be shown how easily and safely it can be done. Achieving lifetime financial independence as a self-directed investor is possible, and my objective is to show you how it can be done. Question number one. How long should you hold onto a stock whose share price does not increase significantly? My portfolio makes money consistently in the stock market. I can go for a year and never buy or sell stocks. This is because I only invest in financially strong companies paying high dividends. Stock scoring software measuring 11 factors is used to sort stocks from the most to the least desirable. I limit my portfolio to the 20 best stocks I can find out of the 16,240 available on the North American stock exchanges. For safe diversity, I invest equally in each of these stocks. They are rarely all up or down at the same time. It is important to be concerned about the overall performance of the total portfolio, not each of the stocks individually. The average annual dividend income for the portfolio is 6%, and the portfolio's most years grows by about 12%. This is despite my taking out some of the dividend income to live on and investing some of it back into the 20 stocks. Over 20 years, the portfolio has grown into the seven figures while generating that steady six-figure income, even during the 2008 and 2020 market crashes when share prices greatly declined. The portfolio paid its regular dividends and the stock scores remained steady. I only spend 5 minutes on 5 days each week just keeping an eye on what the portfolio is doing. No one can accurately predict future share prices, but it is possible to predict future dividend payouts. I can provide many examples of companies whose executives have consistently raised dividend payouts for more than 20 years. Share prices do not have such consistency because speculators control share prices, unlike the executives who control the revenue and expense decisions for a company. If your objective is to preserve your wealth, grow it steadily, and live well off that portfolio, why would you be buying stocks at a low price with the hope that they will soar to a higher price to then be sold and make you incredibly rich? Such speculation supposedly fails 90% of the time. Why speculate? Successful investing does not have to involve constant trading. Only if stock scores and dividend payouts decline together would I consider selling a stock. And this rarely occurs. Question number two. When buying shares for your portfolio, do you need to consider more than the stock's price? Supply and demand determine the price of a stock. The stock market is an auction vehicle that manages the bids from potentially millions of stock buyers and sellers. An ever-increasing share price for a stock reflects the desire of thousands of investors to own a specific stock. They must bid higher and higher amounts to get those who currently own the stock to accept their buy bids. Many years ago, I developed a stock scoring system based on the premise that an ideal stock score would be 100. If a stock scored 100, it would have to meet the following 11 criteria. Price is the first factor in my stock scoring matrix. To earn 10 out of 10, a stock price would have to be greater than $100. Out of the 16,240 stocks traded in North America, only 799 can be purchased for $100 or more. The higher the price approaching 100, the higher the score earned by that stock. A stock that could be purchased for between 1 cent and 99 cents would only earn a score of 1, while a stock between $10 and $14.99 would earn a score of 5. In total, there were 10 different share price levels providing different scores. While today's share price is important, in my scoring matrix, 9 other factors must also be equally considered in getting a picture of the financial strength, dividend income, and potential for share price growth. Each of these other 9 factors has from 4 to 10 gradation levels providing that determine the score for that factor. The second criteria that would earn an additional 10 out of 10 would be a stock price that was greater than $100 4 years ago. Forcing an investor to look at a historical price confirms that the company even existed 4 years ago. If it did not exist 4 years ago, the stock score would then be 0. If it did exist, whether the amount was higher or lower than the current price would show a trend. The added benefit is if you are going to look at the price 4 years ago, you're almost automatically going to look at the share price trend over many years. Looking at the price trend for the last 24 years gives you an investor insight into how much prices dipped in the market crash years of 2000, 2008, and 2020, as well as how long it took them to recover to new record highs. Whether you like it or not, you will eventually go through another market crash, and recognizing that a market crash is not a time to panic, but a time to be patient and wait for your portfolio to recover. The third subscoring factor measures the share price trend. To achieve 10 out of 10, the current stock price would need to be 99.5% greater than it was 4 years ago. A current share price that was lower than it was 4 years ago would score a 0. Most new businesses have a hard time surviving their first year. A business that has survived 4 years indicates an ability to both grow and survive. One whose share price is now significantly higher is showing strength and potential to grow further. The fourth factor earning a score of 10 out of 10 in the scoring system would be a stock with a book value greater than $100. The company's book value is calculated by accountants, subtracting the company's liabilities from its assets and dividing this amount by the number of shareholders. It has nothing to do with share prices. A book value greater than the share price indicates that you would be buying the stock at a bargain price. The perceived low price will attract investors. The demand for stock often drives the share price up. After scoring thousands of stocks, I have found relatively few stocks whose book price exceeds their share price. But when I find them, I am often tempted to buy them, depending on the stock's total score. The fifth factor compares the share price to the book value. A current share price less than the book value by more than 49.49% would earn the highest score of 10, while a current price book that is 49.5 cents greater than the book value would score 0. Gradations between these two extremes would earn from 8 points to 1 point. The sixth and seventh criteria leave pricing considerations behind. And these two, they are based on the opinions of stock analysts. If five or more analysts rated a stock a buy, a score of 5 out of a possible 5 would be earned. Similarly, if analysts rated it a strong buy, it would only need 2 analysts giving it the strong buy rating to achieve a score of 4. Few analysts are willing to go out on a limb and risk their reputations by giving a stock a strong buy score. In my review of analysts' recommendations, it seemed that they were usually accurate in their predictions about 50% of the time. However, their recommendations do need to be considered because they do influence investors to buy stocks, which can cause share prices to increase. Since one objective of a portfolio is that it show an increase in value, analyst influences cannot be ignored. The eighth factor for achieving a score of 10 out of 10 would be a stock's dividend yield percent if it were between 7.5% and 10.49%. Interestingly, a dividend yield percent of 10.5% would drop a score down to only 2. A stock paying no dividend would score 0. Why would a stock paying a dividend yield percent of 20 only score a 2? I found that stocks that are paying high dividend yields percents often had serious financial problems or were one-hit wonders. The odds were that they would not be able to maintain such an unusually high dividend yield nor increase their share price. The ninth factor for achieving a score of 10 out of 10 would be a stock with an operating margin of 79.5% or greater. An operating margin is roughly what is left after all the expense to generate the company's revenue has been deducted. It is from the operating margin that dividends are paid to shareholders. If a company with a negative operating margin is paying a dividend, which I have seen, you would want to know from where this seemingly unprofitable company was getting the money to pay that dividend. Some companies, fearing if they do not pay a dividend will see their share prices collapse, have been known to borrow money to pay dividend to shareholders. Taking on such debt would be a sign of weakness. You cannot count on such a stock for value growth or for a reliable dividend payout. The 10th factor is how many shares of the stock are being traded daily. A stock whose average daily volume of shares traded exceeds 2 million would score 10 out of 10. Some stocks, few paying dividends, trade fewer than 100 shares in a day. Many preferred shares trade few shares. Such a low volume stock trades make it difficult to acquire and to sell such shares. Few, especially analysts, see any potential for paying them any attention. The 11th and final criteria is a stock's price to earnings ratio. A ratio between 0.1 to 5.49 would score 10 out of a possible 10. You will often see the highly popular in-demand stocks with price-to-earning ratios in the hundreds, even thousands. Investors who are buying these stocks at such high price-to-earnings ratios think the gravy train can go on forever. They do not want to even consider the stock could suddenly drop steeply down to a more realistic share price. These high price-to-earnings stocks rarely see a need to pay dividends. They are often tech stocks who will get away with saying every penny they earn is being invested back into product development. The speculators buy this reason for not paying dividends to shareholders as long as they have the potential to sell their stocks at an ever-increasing price. Panic selling begins every time the share price dips below what hundreds of thousands of investors paid for the stock. There's a thing called competition, which is the great leveler in the stock market. Unique, high-flying stocks do lose their uniqueness. Competitors flood into the marketplace with similar products that have more features and a lower price. Monopolies are short-lived. After scoring thousands of stocks for my books over the last 4 years, I have learned that a perfect dividend stock score of 100 can never exist. The highest score out of the thousands that I've calculated has been a 78. Some of my readers who get the stock scoring software with their book purchase have reported scores in the 80s. I do know that there are a few stocks scoring over 60, and most stocks score less than 50. The lowest score I have ever calculated was an 8. You soon learn in building a strong, high dividend portfolio that you must make compromises between dividend percentage, potential for share price growth, and financial strength. While price is obviously an important consideration in choosing a stock for your portfolio, it is just one consideration. All 11 information items used in my scoring matrix are easily available on the internet and often supplied by whatever financial service you are using as a self-directed investor. The very last thing I do in finally selecting a stock, which has nothing to do with price, is a Google search on the internet. I key in the name of the company being considered and following with the words complaints and legals. I am too often surprised when investment frauds, class action legal suits, and questionable business practices are brought to my attention. Often this information is enough to rule out my investing in the stock being considered. The risk is not worth the possible reward. Question number 3. How much debt should I take on in creating a portfolio of high dividend, financially strong stocks? Before you can think of investing in stocks, you need to pay off all your debts with intolerably high interest rates. It makes no sense to be paying credit card interest in excess of 20% when you're only receiving 6 to 8% in dividend income. Being mindful of interest rates includes your spouse's debts. Married couples are often responsible for each other's debts. Financial compatibility and agreement on how to handle debt is not only important in establishing a long-term relationship, but in achieving financial independence. Surveys have shown that 90% of respondents view financial responsibility by a prospective spouse as an appealing trait. 53% of respondents said they would avoid a relationship with someone who was debt-burdened. 60% had been in relationships with partners who were reckless with money, and now they avoided relationships with the financially irresponsible. While infidelity may be the number one reason for divorce, the number two reason is money. Until you and your spouse are free of high interest obligations, you must question every dollar spent. The people I know who have worked hard to accumulate millions of dollars in assets don't drive overly expensive show cars, wear expensive designer clothes, live in 10,000 square foot mansions, or engage in an overly extravagant lifestyle. Before they spend a dollar, they think about the realizable cost benefit of that dollar. These are not impulsive people. In the legendary book, The Millionaire Next Door, the authors describe how 50 years ago, they began studying the wealthy. They started their research in those areas that they thought would be the most logical place, the well-to-do areas across the United States. They soon discovered that people in the impressive upscale home who drove expensive cars rarely had a net worth in the millions of dollars. The foundation of their lifestyle was not a high net worth, it was high debt. Most of those with a million or more of net worth were found living modestly in unpretentious areas. Thus, the title of their book, The Millionaire Next Door. The cost of creating the illusion of wealth removes any chance of ever achieving real wealth that would give you the financial independence to stop working and still maintain your lifestyle. Perhaps you cannot blame them. Our society conditions us to expect to be working for 40 years of our lives. It does not attempt to show us how to achieve financial independence as early in our lives as possible. Investing is not a topic taught in high school, but it should be. Thanks for listening. If you wish more information on investing and stock scoring, please visit my website, www.saferbetterdividendinvesting.com.